Why are you here?
I got this situation where I need your help.
I need bad friends.
Was that the new guy?
Is that Sniper?
Don't worry about it. I got a prescription scope.
Well, Hawkeyes, remember this face. Don't shoot it by accident.
Terrorists have taken possession of nuclear missiles on a cargo ship off the coast. If these babies go off, it'll be World War III.
Take cover!
To choose this life over friends, over family.
It's time to get loud.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Is that the biggest one you've got?
Oh, it's way bigger than that.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Robcast. I'm your host, Rob Daniel, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-host, Mr. Rob Wallace.
And as always, it's a pleasure to be here.
And we're back for the second time in about 4 days on Crime Alley. And why is that, Rob?
We're here to talk about Expendables.
We are here to talk about Expendables. Expendables 4, but it is called Expendables, so that's how we will... gruelingly referred to it for the rest of the show. Yes, this is of course the belated fourth call in the Expendables franchise. I think, am I right in saying that Expendables 3 was 2014?
Let me check. You're correct.
Yeah, so this is almost 10 years later and...
Oh, it's a legacy call. We've just seen...
yeah. With...
A legacy call to a film that was already built on legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was not a legacy sequel. That was just another installment. Well, actually, that had a touch of the dial of destiny to it in terms of, this is the story you wanted to tell? Okay. Although, actually, this one didn't seem like it was the final installment. It seemed as if there was going to be, as if there could be more. So, before we get into what we thought of Expendables, what is the plot of Expendables?
The Expendables are assigned on a mission to stop a terrorist organization headed by Swat Ramat from smuggling nuclear warheads that would ignite a conflict. That's a spoiler. Yeah. It's not a big one. It's not like nobody cares, but...
Yeah, it is a bit of a spoiler, so I'm just going to bleep that and then say... And they're basically having to get these nuclear things to stop something bad happening. As is the want of these sort of movies. Something bad happening on maybe like a big scale that might include other parts of the world. Basically, it's a guys on a mission movie.
They Bulgaria, have Greece and Portugal, we concluded, right?
And the
based
UK.
Based on the endless end credits.
Yeah, so it's a guys on a mission movie. They have to get something to stop something from blowing up. And there are lots of them. Yeah, so in this one, we have Jason Statham as Christmas. So he's called Christmas. And the ladies seem to like the Jason. And he is joined by Sylvester Stallone, obviously, as Barney, his boss, and Megan Fox as, my God, what was her name even? Did you have to keep that phone open, Rob? Because, my God, those names did not go
Gina.
Into... Gina, okay, yes. And as Rob, well, actually, you can tell it because it was such a good line. What did you say before the film started?
Well, we were looking at the giant poster up on the IMAX screen and say, oh, it's Jason Statham and the Meg.
Again. So the last Jason Statham film that we reviewed was a few weeks ago, and that was The Meg. Here he is again with another Meg. It all just seems to be tying in. Who else is there? So there's Randy Couture as whatever his name was.
Randy Couture as Toll Road.
Yep, that happened. And there's Dolph Lundgren, and Dolph Lundgren is always good value. And who is Dolph?
He's Gunnar Jensen. He's, no, let's talk about that in the spoilers, because that's a weird moment.
That was actually one of the few moments that I thought, this is the kind of spirit that we need in this film. And there's, who was the Latin American guy?
I believe that's Jacob Scipio.
Yeah, he's the son of someone who used to be in the Expendables, apparently, something like that. Anyway.
And don't forget Curtis 50 Cent Jackson.
Oh, yes. We have Curtis 50 Cent Jackson as Easy Day, was it?
Yes.
That's the one that did stick with me then.
And Andy Garcia, who, seeing off on the poster, I was like, one of these actors is not like the others.
Yeah, it is weird to see Andy Garcia commandoed up. But yeah, he's the guy that sends them on the missions. His first scene does have a real sense of the check, please. When he walks in, it just gives them their mission and walks out again. It's like, that was a good half morning's work, Andy.
Oh, you say, on the action front, there's also Tony Jaa.
Yes, we have Tony Jaa. He's in it as well. And the big bad is played by Iko Uwe. So he plays, is it Ramat? Did it?
Swato Ramat.
Ramat. Yeah, so Iko Uwe, obviously, from the Raid movies. He's a good baddie. He actually has a lot of charisma. Has a lot of charisma in the Raid movies, but is just very, very virtuous. Here he has a lot of charisma as just someone having fun at how bad they are. So that was a nice surprise. But without further to-do, what did we think of Expendables?
It's weird how budget it feels, given the cast. Then again, the cast is where your budget goes.
Yes, I completely agree, but what do you mean by that?
I mean, it has a kind of a handful of action set pieces. Essentially, pretty much each act is like an action set piece.
Yeah.
But it's all, for the most part, I mean, either close quarters combat or quite unconvincing explosions.
Yeah, I mean, it was filmed apparently on location in Bulgaria, in Greece, in the UK, in Portugal. Well, they must have great green screens there then, because I just refuse to believe that any of this film was shot outdoors. There's a scene at the beginning when Christmas and Barney go to Gina's house, and it's clearly, and it's just a suburban street, but it's clearly shot on green screen, right?
Well, yeah, like, because it's a suburban street in New Orleans.
And we just watched
Big Shark.
Big Shark, the Tommy Wiseau film. And that was shot on location in New Orleans. So it can be done on a film that had a far smaller budget than this one, I would wager. That was a weird opening. It's like, we are watching a virtual suburban street. Why? And I think you're right. I think that the answer is because this is a budget movie, even though it had a lot of people working on it. But as we saw, the cast had a lot of people for every single location they went to. They were well looked after, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, that's, the action scenes aside, which obviously required proficiency, you can't imagine this was particularly strenuous on anyone involved. And the film script written, I mean, it certainly, you don't get the impression it was particularly draining on Kurt Wimmer, Tad Daggerheart, if that is your real name, and Max Adams, who wrote the script for it, because every single joke feels like the first draft of that joke.
And a lot of them seem like on-the-day improv. And Kurt Wimmer, he was the writer-director of Equilibrium, right?
Yeah.
He did the Christian Bale film Equilibrium, which was... And he's actually done some interesting films as old Kurt. So, again, he had a good morning's work. And three writers for that film. Okay, and that's... I mean, to be honest, that's not so different from other Expendables films in terms of all of this could have done with a punch-up. All of this seems like a bit of a first draft. The humour is never funny. I mean, the opening, when Christmas and Gina are having that fight and they keep trying to bring the Barney character played by Sylvester Stallone into it, and it's like, this is supposed to be zingy and almost like slapstick screwball
it's just
comedy.
Puerile.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's just puerile.
And that's the thing, most of the time it ends for dumb fun and just kind of gets the dumb. Occasionally the dumb fun part happens.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, yeah, my thoughts on this were, yeah, I mean, completely with you on the, my God, this looks very, very straight to DVD. There's a scene where they go on a mission to Libya to Gaddafi's old chemical plant, which I think is what it says on screen when it gives the location. And the thing there was that it was like, there's a moment when a surface-to-air missile is launched and it looked properly like a phone app. It was one of those things where the plume of smoke that emits from this missile looked very stage one in the a rendering of that particular CGI.
It was better than the shark in Big Shark.
But marginally.
Yeah, but it was being done by the same company, like, you know, it was the same app.
Yeah,
it just spent slightly longer to polish it.
And that's the thing, is that I've never really found the Expendables films particularly exciting, and I think there's a reason for that. Everything looks a bit first draft. The action scenes look a bit first draft, and I'm sorry, but this one made the fatal flaw that they all make. They get amazing action stars in and amazing martial arts stars in. and then they seem to be filming it as if they've just had all the espressos and sugar in the world and just can't hold the camera straight, and they just can't hold the camera still.
That's because, like, a lot of the time they're putting those martial arts stars against people who aren't martial arts stars. So, you know, if you're going to have a fight between Jason Statham and Tony Jaa, you're going to have to do certain things. They're going to have to do certain things to make it look like...
A little bit, but I think it's one of those things where there are Jackie Chan films and there are other films where they get people and it's basically the martial artist is doing all the work and you can teach people enough to make it look good and to do it in a wide shot. But just clearly they thought, we could do that, but we can't be asked to do that because that would take a bit more time. So therefore we'll film it super close up, really, really jerky camera, so that you can kind of see something's going on, but... It doesn't have a patch on The Raid or The Raid 2 or on Back or...
Also, you know...
Any of those films, like A Warrior King, it's like, oh...
Even with the affection that I have for the Stath, at this point, you could just create a trailer and cut scenes from the various films that he's in, and you wouldn't be able to tell because he's always the same character.
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of those
If you just took a dialogue scene from this and inserted it into The Meg... Two.
Yeah.
You would be like, that's a little odd. Don't remember that other person, but yeah, sure, fine.
And some parts of this do look a bit like The Meg 2 in terms of there's a point where someone's talking to a woman on a screen and it's like, yeah, that seems a little bit Meg 2, to be honest. I wonder if they shot this at the same time.
Every single plot development.
Yeah.
The thing that you think is going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah, there's a certain... Hannah said, let's just talk in the broad sense of what we thought and then just get into spoilers. So, yeah, so I would say that this is... I mean, it was hour 45-ish. Let's find someone that's a little bit quieter. The night is quite busy on Crime Alley tonight. But, yeah, there was... It was hour 45. I kind of enjoyed watching it. Well, I wasn't bored, but I wasn't really excited. It's a weird experience watching Expendables films because you come out always thinking, I know how that could have been better with a very, very quick script polish. And they clearly had some money to spend because as we sat through all of the end credits to see if there was an end credit scene, there isn't. Rob at one point said, I don't think these are ever going to stop. Like, yeah, this is what we do now. We just watch the end credits for Expendables. But yeah, so... I don't think, was there anything else? And a lot of it takes place in a single location, and that also really added to the budget feel of it, I thought.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I made any... They're a covert operation team. A lot of their stuff is branded.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, that's a good point. There was... There's a noise.
Drone strike.
There is a drone strike, yes. It's Statham and Stallone saying, slag off our film, will you? Yeah, I'm trying to think of the other things that I wrote.
The film does, however, contain the line that there's only so many times you can kill a man. Christmas.
That's not bad. So we're now on St. Martin Street next to the new Odeon at the bottom of Leicester Square. So there's that. What do we think of the cast? I completely agree with what you said about the Stath. I do enjoy just watching the Stath, though.
I mean, all the cast have precisely one character beat.
Yes.
And they maybe get one scene each. Or, well, no, they get, like, three bits of one scene that might add up to one scene.
That's right. Let's go behind here. We're now walking down to the National Gallery.
Okay, there's one slightly outrageous scene that a lot of people enjoyed involving an influencer.
Thank you. That was the scene, because I was saying to you afterwards, the Expendables films, for all of the apparent humour in them, I've never properly laughed at one. That scene with the influencer, that did make me properly, genuinely laugh. And it made me think, actually, I wish that the Stath had made another Crank film, because they at least did have a weird life to them, whereas these all just seem a bit produced from the same...
I don't know. I think after the ending of the most recent one, I think another Crank film would just be far-fetched.
Yeah. I was quite excited to see what Megan Fox would do in this film, and she wasn't really given much to do, and I don't think she did it particularly well, to be honest. But yeah, you're right. They all have a single character beat.
Her first scene in the film is her yelling at her boyfriend.
Yes, it is. I was surprised by that intro. I thought it was going to be something else. Yeah, I mean, Andy Garcia. Yeah, he's good, but...
I'd rather watch him as something else.
Yeah, I'd rather watch The Untouchables again or something. I mean, he's been in better films.
The most recent Ghostbusters, where he keeps on having to protest that he's not the mayor from Jaws. That was quite funny.
The 2016 Ghostbusters, sorry, not the most recent.
Oh, right, yeah.
They keep describing him as the mayor from Jaws, and he's like, I'm not the mayor from Jaws.
That's right. I forgot he was in that. We've got a little car driving off now. Oh, the city is alive tonight. Anything else to say about the cars before we get to spoilers? Or the film?
No?
No, I don't think so. Okay, then we're going to play a bit of the trailer and then you'll be in spoilers. So thank you for listening. And shall we do our plugs now in case they haven't seen the film? And...
Yeah, let's do the plugs.
Cool. Well, neither of us are on Twitter anymore, and it'll be debatable as to whether the Movie Robcast Twitter account is on Twitter. We just need to get in touch with a few people to let them know what our contact details are going to be, so probably don't even look at that.
So should we start with the Movie Robcast contact details, or should we start with ours?
You can start with yours if you want.
Cool. If you're looking for me online, you can email me, basically. You can find my writing at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. There should be quite a lot going up there in the next couple of weeks, well, next few weeks, with the London Film Festival. We also have run another podcast called Another Time McCloud, which is a scene-by-scene analysis, dissection, general loving of the movie Highlander. If you like the movie Highlander, I strongly suggest you check it out. And if you can find that wherever you listen to this. It's called Another Time McCloud. You'd also drop us a Highlander-themed email at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Instagram at robdan75. You can follow me on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/robdan. More importantly, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at themovierobcast. Or you can send us a movie-themed email or just something, say hello, at movierobcast@gmail.com. So I was thinking, we could go on to TikTok, but that's fucking compromised as well.
We could go on to TikTok.
Well, I've had a Gen Zer saying, you've got to get on to TikTok with your podcast because that's where you'll get lots of potential listeners. And it's like, but isn't it evil as well and just a big spying thing for the Chinese government?
And isn't this despite you repeatedly in her presence referring it to, only semi-ironically, as TikTok?
Look, I just don't understand the tickety-tock.
I love Chinese malware.
Yeah, I love Chinese malware. I want my phone to explode in my hand.
Yeah, I want to be the oldest Manchurian candidate on the platform.
Right, so you're going to hear a bit of the trailer, then we're going to get into spoilers. Thank you very much for listening. If you haven't seen the film, probably just wait for Home End. And yeah, don't listen to this bit because we will give away some of the spoilers, although you will probably guess them. And thank you very much, and we'll speak to you soon.
On September 22nd.
Time for music.
We heard you.
This is gonna be fun.
Loud and clear. Please make Expendables 4 rated R. There better be violence and lots of it. I want all the blood and guts.
Fuck it.
So you're now in the spoiler section. So, Rob, what spoilers would you like to talk about?
I mean, is it a spoiler if we're just confirming what their first thought was?
That is a deep philosophical question, that is.
He's been, talking about it as his final appearance in the franchise.
Who's that, sorry?
Sylvester Stallone. Barney's not dead. Transparently not dead, because there's a plane crash. You don't see him in the plane at the point when it crashes. And when they find its body, it's burned beyond recognition. So it's like... that's not how you're going to go out, is it?
That moment when they come across the big pile of barbecue in a flight suit. But that's clearly not Sylvester Stallone.
I mean, I wasn't expecting who it was.
Yeah, that ending, and we're in the spoilers now, so they know who it was. It's like, it ends on a really fucking weird note of celebratory psychosis.
Yeah, where they just murder, Big Shrimp or whatever his name is. They're basically this random... bar guy they had beef with earlier, and he basically looks like they basically murdered Michael Jeter.
Yes, they did murder Michael Jeter. Is it Jumbo Shrimp? Is that his
Jumbo
name?
Shrimp, there we go.
But also the fact that, because I thought, did they kill Jumbo Shrimp earlier and I just missed it, that he punched him out and killed him? But no,
he's alive and screaming in the plane.
That was very surprising. But it's like, you didn't, I did.
Hey.
Laugh to camera. And I think a freeze frame.
I've got to assume, I don't know who this guy was. He was just like a random thug in a bar.
Well, he stole his ring. He stole Barney's ring.
He didn't steal Barney's ring. Barney lost his ring in a fair bet. And then beat him up and took it back.
did forget that.
And the fact that, like, you know, when they're referring to him as Jumbo Shrimp, it's only after Jason Statham says it directly to his face you realise that's clearly not his nickname, or it's not something that people say around him.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, so you've just turned up, insulted him, demanded back his property, and then, like, you kick the shit out of him, and then at the end you murder him.
And also that moment at the end when Stallone says to Statham, when he says, "Oh, you want to tell me what's going on? I mourned you," and blah, blah, blah. He says, "Well, yeah, I had to fake my own death so that I could make Ocelot, the terrible mole, expose himself and I could confirm that it was the Andy Garcia character, Marsh." Well, that just raises many more questions than it answers.
Also,
but the state seems to be okay with that.
Not as a code name, but literal ocelots are a recurring gag in the TV series Archer. That there's a tracker in the knife. The film, does it think it's being clever?
I think so. I think it's one of those because you think, oh, there's a tracker in the knife, and then it turns out, oh, of course, that Gina, the Megan Fox character, always knew there was a tracker in the knife and knew that she needed Statham as backup. So, well, that kind of explains that. Much more than Andy Garcia saying, okay, I'm going to throw away the kill switch for this bomb, even though we've got 6 minutes to get off this, and is that enough time to get a dinghy down there and get me in it and stuff, and to get away from the blast radius? It's like, there was a weird touch of The Dark Knight Rises at the end.
Yeah, also the fact that he's apparently doing it for money, and it's like, you can't spend the money if you're dead.
That's what I was thinking. It was,
you've
like,
just thrown your only failsafe overboard.
Yeah. And you're not going to get out of the blast area in that fucking dinghy, no matter how big the outboard motor on it.
And then at the end, Stallone sinks the ship, fires missiles at the ship and sinks it in the quickest time a ship has ever sunk. And then they kind of, not quite, but almost ride out the blast wave. It's like, yeah, luckily nuclear weapons, the detonation of a nuclear bomb, doesn't have any effect on electronic devices.
Yeah, but the logic of this film is the EMP wouldn't happen because it's underwater. It's like, not sure that's how that works either. And also, yeah, you're right. That was, I mean, it's a massive tanker and it goes down in about 20 seconds. And at that point, I just thought, well, it's on a big IMAX screen. We saw it at the Cineworld Leicester Square. It's not a bad effect. I think that most of the money of the effects budget went on to this ending because they're a little bit better than what we've seen before, and that's quite a spectacle. But yeah, wouldn't that completely disable the helicopter and then crash into the sea and die for real this time?
And also, is it better if the blast happens underwater?
Yeah, they've exploded underwater nuclear bombs for tests and stuff, so it is.
Yeah,
but it's like, I mean, I don't think it's very good for the marine life around there, but but it's all right for us, apparently, so that's fine. And of course, like, yeah, Batman does the same at the end of The Dark Knight Rises. There were weird touches of the ending to The Dark Knight Rises, like the fact that they thought that Eco Away had the kill switch, and it turns out, no, he's just a second-in-command to Andy Garcia, and it's all a big reveal. Although, I was thinking, well, it's either Andy Garcia or it's Megan Fox, but it's not going to be Megan Fox.
Because Megan Fox, then that would be, yeah, that would be entirely The Dark Knight Rises. Though I'm now just imagining Andy Garcia making out with Jason Statham. That's just ended up in my head. That's a subplot that would have made the film far more interesting.
Would have made it. I think they might have shot it and then removed it early on. I want to get The Dark Knight Rises gut where you see Andy Garcia make out with Jason Statham. That's fact. But did you think it could be anyone else? I mean, it's kind of suggested it could be 50 Cent, but I think he wants to be part of this franchise now, so he's not going to be the baddie.
I didn't really think about it because I didn't really care. I thought that maybe the guy they got off the chopper to identify him could actually end up to being the baddie, because you pretend that you're a witness and then you get them to bring you on board.
I think there was a touch of that to the Mel Gibson bad guy from Expendables 3. I seem to remember, though it was 9 years ago I saw it. I was thinking it might be Andy Garcia because this is clearly a retirement plan film for him. So he doesn't care if he comes back for another one because he's just making quite good bank from this one. Any other spoilers? I mean, it was really just the fact that Stallone's not dead was the big spoiler, right? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. Is he coming back again?
Well, it seemed to suggest yes. So maybe he was just slanting false information so that people think, oh, he really is dead. Even though there's no way, as you said, he would go out like that as just a pile of barbecue in that plane. He would have a dying speech.
Yeah.
He would have a moment with his friend Christmas. It was quite a gory film in some ways, I thought.
Yeah, there was...
I mean, those knife things. Actually, could you look up and see what the certificate is, if you don't know it already? Because, again, it's one of those things where it's like, well, that would have been cut for an 18, 20 years ago. I mean, I don't know, that is quite a long time.
It's an R, which means it's a PG... No, it's an R, yeah. It's R-rated.
It's R-rated, but that means that it could be a 15 or an 18 in this country. I always think that has to be an 18, but there's a Mary Elizabeth Winstead film called
Kate. It's a 15.
It's a 15, yeah. That's the thing. I thought it would be a 15, because it's like... There's a Mary Elizabeth Winstead film called Kate on Netflix, which has so many stabbings and knifings and blood coming out. And it's a 15. And it's like, well, then I think that pretty much anything goes at 15 now. It's only sexual violence, I think, that kind of gets you to an 18. Or really, really graphic gore. And even though this had lots of knifings and lots of throat stabbings in, it wasn't particularly graphic. And some of it felt quite nasty.
Yeah, when the guy fell on the lift shaft and meloned his head.
No, but that was funny. I mean, that was funny. Because he just dung, comes to a complete stop, but explodes. I mean, that was like the other guys, right? No, sorry, what's the one?
The nice guys.
The nice guys, yeah. Although it actually was like the other guys as well. Because there was also a moment when the BBFC would cut something if it was obvious that the hero was taking pleasure in the pain he was causing.
So they cut the entire end of this film.
Yeah. Well, they did that to a Schwarzenegger film called Eraser, which I think had the final death of the baddie taken out for a 15 because... it was so cruel and sadistic. But there's a moment in this when Statham has stabbed someone and is really twisting the knife. And I thought, again, that would have been either cut for a 15 or got the film an 18.
And they also quite, again, go back to jubilantly kill somebody who's not really a baddie.
Is that Mr. Jumbo Shrimp?
Yeah.
Justice for Jumbo.
Justice for Jumbo. Also, the film plays somebody falling off the wagon as a triumphant moment.
So I'm really, really glad you said that. That is the one moment of this film that I thought... this is more of the anarchic, we've got Fast and Furious going past right now in a Hyundai. It's a standoff between two cars.
I hope he's not reversing, that is disabled parking.
I think he's letting that one come through. No, I think you're right, I think he's just parking in a disabled parking spot.
Maybe he's got a blue tag.
Has he?
Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't.
Can't see it.
Oh, he's pulling out. Okay, that's...
oh, he's letting the other person go.
Okay,
right.
That's fine. That was
more exciting and tense than anything in Expendables. So I thought we're going to have to say you can't park there because that's a disabled spot. Anyway, the moment when the Dolph Lundgren character falls off the wagon... well, he doesn't fall off the wagon. He jumps off the wagon.
Because he realises he can't shoot, apparently, when he's not pissed.
And he's an ex-alcoholic who walks around with a full... hip flask of booze.
Just in case.
Maybe it's just there because it's like, if it's there, then I know I don't need it. Anyway, it seems as if his eyesight's going. And I thought that was quite nice that they're all kind of groaning a bit and they've all got these things wrong with them, which is a tiny, tiny subplot that could have been done a lot more with. But it seems as if he has got knackered eyes now, so therefore he's not going to be a very good sniper. And it turns out he needs to get really, really pissed. And then his aim is dead straight. That, I thought...
although he was drinking milk again in the final scene, which indicates he might just drink on missions.
It was a white Russian.
He might just drink at work now.
Yeah, I just drink. Honestly, I kill people better when I'm pissed. But I like that. I thought that it needs more of that kind of anarchic spirit. Of like, I'm an alcoholic, I haven't had a drink in ages, but fuck it. I might die, so therefore I'm just going to get pissed. And it turns out that this is my spinach.
Or when the Tony Jaa character, who is like, he's now a man of peace, and he's, you know, even though he's, you know, amazing, he's, you know, he's retired from violence, and you know he's going to turn up. I mean, although I was really kind of hoping he wouldn't. I would have been so happy if he hadn't turned up. It was like, of course he turns up. He murders a bunch of fucking people with a knife. Did that whole thing about, like, buying back your soul? Just...
well, they tried to style that out by saying, I wouldn't be able to forgive myself if I let Barney's friend die, which is a bit of a stab or a dig at how inept he thinks the Christmas character is, the Jason Statham character. I know you need my help, so I have to put that on hold. But I'm with you, because I was thinking, well... what we're going to see here is Tony Jaa being amazing, but we're going to have to squint through the jerky camera work to see that. So therefore, it would be much better if he just said, yep, bye everyone. I'm on the poster, but I'm not going to do anything in this film apart from just take him to the ship. That would have been quite funny and a surprise, but you knew that was never going to happen. Is there anything else we want to say about Expendable Balls, apart from I wonder if they'll wait another 9 years for Expendable 5?
Yeah, Bend, the S is a 5.
Yeah, so Expendable 5. And then Sixpendables.
No, I give up. No, you know what?
Expend-sevenables. Expendatables.
This is the same level of brainstorming that went into making this film.
Yes. I wonder if they called it Expendables on set. The kind of things you ponder while you're watching the movie.
This is exactly what they wanted people's mind to be.
That's right. that. It's like, oh, should I pick up milk? I haven't got enough milk at home. What if they call this expendables on set? Oh, look at that. Someone's just blown up. Oh, and the Stath has now said something else that really needed a bit of a punch up in the script. And that clearly wasn't Sylvester Stallone dying.
Again, the Chinese censor is...
Yes, indeed, the Chinese censors go, come on, guys, come on, I've got an army of people here just waiting to get their hands on this stuff. That was the Meg, wasn't it? Oh, Jesus. It does make you think if the Stath will ever make another film, like a proper movie where he has to try a bit. He delivered his Stath by the yard in this. He delivered his Stath by the yard in the Meg 2. He delivered his Stath by the yard in that one scene he's got in Fast X. So he's been in three films this year. You don't get me wrong, I love him, he's great, he's always great fun to watch, but it is Stath by the yard now, and I just want to see him try a bit in a film again and do a film that's a bit outside of his comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll get one where he's, when he's a bit older, when he's what, 50?
And he must be around 50 now.
Let's look this up.
Let's end on seeing just how old the Stath is. I'm thinking he's 47.
Fucking hell.
How old is he?
He's 56.
Jason Statham is 56. Fuck. My God, he's giving Tom Cruise a run for his money in the I refuse to age stakes. Jason Statham is really 56 years old. Fuck.
He was born on the 26th of July, 1967.
1967. Yeah, he's 56. Wow. Then I think he should be trying a little bit harder because he is well into his... But it's weird, isn't it? Because he doesn't look 56, so therefore he can't do his old man films just yet. He's going to have to wait until he's 80 to do those films. His Unforgiven is going to be another 24 years away. He's 60 in 4 years. That's the biggest surprise of the evening. Hats off to you, Stath. Whatever you're doing, all that swimming clearly paid off. You do you, mate. You do you. But also do something that takes you outside your comfort zone a bit as well, because, you know, it would be good to see that.
Maybe some theatre.
Yeah, some theatre. Or just a thriller that... I mean, because he did do those films like Parker and stuff like that, and there was a period around the 2010s where he was trying to move away from the action stuff.
Hummingbird
but...
and...
Yeah, that's right, yeah, because that had another...
Safe and Blitz and...
Yeah, Blitz, well, that was a bit of an odd film. Safe was more of an action film. Actually, I liked Safe. I thought Safe was good. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a Stath film I haven't enjoyed. It's just that I don't think there's been a film yet that has really tapped into his full potential.
Yeah, I...
We have to write it and get Gareth Evans to fucking direct it.
Yeah, we could definitely write a Stath film.
Hmm. You heard it here first. Right, we're going to spend the autumn doing that.
Having as an East End villain, and he turns up and everything's been gentrified. Like, he's been in prison or he's been away... yeah, I think there's something to...
Isn't that the plot of the Stallone series that just came out?
What? It's Tulsa Kings? Is that the film?
Yeah, something like that. There's like a series where he plays someone who's come out of prison and everything's weird and there are people standing on street corners with VR headsets, as we all know they do. And he's like, whoa, what's that? Maybe we could do a Get Carter-type film for him. Let's write Crank 3.
Crunk.
Crunk. Anything else to add to? And I've not even talked about The Nun 2. Oh my God, The Nun 2. Great, you should see it. And, you know, it's not great, but it is a thoroughly enjoyable ghost story film, and I had a great time watching it, and I'll talk more about it next time.
Yeah, I think that's it for me.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Thank you very much, Rob.
And thank you for listening, and we will be speaking to you again about other movies very, very soon.
Enjoy the show!
Expendables. Definitely rated R. In theaters September 22nd.